and Willie D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and the Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports, and joining us now is TD Teron Davenport, as he does every week on a Monday at 1 o'clock. TD, always appreciate chatting with you. I know that you are so busy this time of year with the draft coming up in less than 2 weeks, but I wanted to get your thoughts on Jeremy Fowler's report on SportsCenter yesterday. He said Kevin Byard would be open to a trade if the Titans and Kevin Byard's people can't come to a final decision on his contract. What's the latest that you've heard about Kevin Byard and his talks with the Titans about what cap number or what salary he will play under this season?
Yeah, I mean, the last that I've heard was that there weren't any issues. And obviously, you know, we know what was said about the release being requested, but I haven't heard anything in regards to a trade or anything like that. They, from what I understand, intend to keep Kevin Byard in tow as one of their premier players on the defense. So that's what I have as the latest.
So, Teron, we've been kicking this around. Do you feel like they can, if they want to, and maybe the better question is, if they keep the contracts as is with Byard, Derrick Henry, and Ryan Tannehill, does that inhibit them from being able to address other roster needs the way they would like to?
I don't think necessarily it does. There are other contracts that they could go to in order to tweak, to free up some space. Then also, still waiting on all of the exact details of the Jeffrey Simmons deal. That 10.75 number, they may be able to work some things out to where that gets lowered as well, and that'll free up money. As of now, they're right around $6 million in space, and as we said before, they're going to need a good five of that to take care of this year's draft class. So that's more or less the way it would go. I think they could free up money by going to other players.
Now, you, Teron, you had a it was an article in ESPN.com about the Jeffrey Simmons deal and how it, you know, take an in-depth look at it and how it all happened. What did you find out interesting about that deal? Because, again, all the numbers truly haven't come out with that deal. But we had his agent on last week, and he gave us some particulars. But were there anything that you were able to find out about it?
Yeah, I think the big significance of that, A, is the 70% of it, over 70% guaranteed. That was a really good job by Paul DeRussell to get that. And then you look at Rand Carthon's side of it, they kept it under $100 million. So another thing that was interesting is just kind of like the trend that was bucked as far as five-year deals are concerned. This was a four-year extension. You look at Taylor Lewan, he had a five-year. You look at Harold Landry, when he signed a new deal, it was a five-year. You look at Kevin Byard, when he signed a new deal, that was also 5 years. But they were able to get this set up to where, at the very worst, they go back at the table with Jeffrey Simmons still being under 30 years old. So I think that was significant to get him another crack at the apple, so to speak, to get a second big-time deal.
Now,
go ahead, D-Maze.
We'll talk with Teron Davenport. Now, the draft is coming up here very soon, within a week and a half. And, again, there's still, you know, speculations that the Titans may move up to try to get their quarterback. I believe they have Anthony Richardson coming in today, if I'm not mistaken, TD. Has anything changed with that, or is anything leaning more toward them moving up to potentially take a quarterback or moving out of that position to try to gather more picks?
Yeah, I tell you, if this is the way the draft is going to be every year, it's not going to be as fun, because you really can't get a gauge at all, and no one's really talking about their draft plans. So, I mean, if I were to tell you one way or the other, I'll be saying something I don't truly know. I look at it just with the roster as it is. I don't think they're a quarterback away from being a winning team as far as, like, you know, Super Bowl-type winning team. So I would imagine it would be more intelligent to not put a bunch of picks together to move up and get one of these guys, because I don't see – any of them is one that will single-handedly make your team that much better to where you give up the capital to do it. So that's just my two cents from the facility. It's nobody really has a clue.
Is there a guy that you, just from doing your own homework and your personal philosophy about the team, is there a guy that you would be willing to take at 11, not giving up the trade capital to go to number 3 or to 5, whatever it might be, but taking that guy if he falls at 11?
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple ones. I think Jackson Smith and Jigba is someone you have to consider. Paris Johnson Jr., even Peter Skoronski, Christian Gonzalez or Devin Witherspoon, if they're there, I would definitely consider them. You look at some of these other ones, Jalen Carter, if somehow he falls to 10 or 11, rather, those are, you know, that's about 5 of them. I think if Richardson is there at 11, I would definitely take him. I don't know about Will Levis, but I like the potential that Richardson has.
Teron, we had it. Go ahead, Caroline. I'll ask one after you ask this one.
What is your take on Will Levis?
Well, I think it's a mystery. You don't know which one you're getting, the 2021 or 2022 guy. If you could get the 2021, you know, you have a Matt Stafford-like player. But when you have a Matt Stafford-like quarterback, what comes with it? Turnovers. And you look at his interceptions, I mean, 23 over the last 2 years. There's a lot of times where – and you like a guy that has that arm confidence, but there's times where you see him try to put the ball in places that he really shouldn't, but it's just because he has arrogant confidence in his throwing ability. So that leads to turnovers. I think that's the big issue. He has, you know, what you want out of a quarterback, but I just, and especially if I'm a defensive coach, I don't want a quarterback that's prone to turning the football over, and I think that's what Will Levis is. Hmm.
Teron Davenport is with us. Teron, there was a really good set of numbers put out there by one of those analytic guys, and we were looking them over this morning. And I'm trying to make sure I give this guy credit here, but and I'll get his name in a moment. But basically the idea was when they did the research, there was more often than not, in the draft, the teams that trade down and get extra picks are more successful in general, the majority of the time, than the teams that trade picks to move up. Give me your philosophy on that and maybe how it might apply to this draft.
Yeah, I think it all depends on when if there's a top-heavy draft. I think if you have, you know, a set 10 prospects that are just clearly better than everyone else, and then there's a drop-off, then it warrants trading up. I'm not really one that, if I were a GM, I wouldn't really look to trade up. I would always want to acquire more picks and get more shots at getting it right. That's the way I would look at it. And I think you look at this draft, it's pretty deep as far as tight ends are concerned, cornerbacks, receivers. I think it's deep in various positions. Interior offensive line, I wouldn't trade up because I feel like you could get a solid player later, you know, as opposed to moving up and getting one of the premier guys. I don't see as much, with the exception of the quarterbacks, I don't see as much separation.
Now, TD, Jalen Hurts just inked a new deal, $255 million, 5-year extension, $179 of it is guaranteed on the face of it with the no-trade clause. Does this help facilitate a potential deal, you believe, with Lamar Jackson?
I hope it does. I really do. I don't know that it will. It seems like both parties are dug in. And at this point, it's like play on the tag, and you got Odell, you got Todd Monken, it's going to be a different offense. Play under the tag, and then set yourself up to sign an even bigger deal next year, you know, when guys like Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow will be at the table. I mean, me personally, I know a lot of people want to put the gold jacket on Herbert now, but I don't know that Herbert is in a position better than Lamar to demand money. But I do hope that all in all, they're able to find a way to get it done, but I don't think so.
TD is with us, Teron Davenport. TD, Bud Dupree heads to Atlanta, which seems like the you know, the landing spot for a whole lot of former Tennessee Titans. But look at the pass rusher position, edge rusher position for the Tennessee Titans. How do you feel about that room as currently constructed?
Well, I think it all depends on how quickly Harold Landry could get back up to form. That's going to be a big-time thing. I mean, you know, the bright part of the whole darkness of him being injured is that it happened in September, so there's plenty of time to come back. So it really depends on him. I know they like some of these pass rushers. You know, they had Keon White out of Georgia Tech here for a visit. I know they like Will McDonald, the fourth, out of Iowa State. They like Derek Hall out of Auburn. Those are a few guys that I know have been tied to them. I mean, look, Nolan Smith would be interesting also. I mean, you get a Hassan Reddick type of player. So there will be options for them at 11 and even 41 if they want to do that. I think the group is solid, though, that they have right now, because remember, you could bump Danico Autry outside and he could stand up and rush the passer.
Ron Davenport, appreciate you as always. We will chat with you next week.
For sure. Appreciate it. You guys take care.
Yep.
Awesome. Thanks, TD. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get your thoughts on that coming up next. And tune into Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on 1025 and 1063 The Game for the first three rounds on Thursday, April 27th and Friday, April 28th. Coverage presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, thenewcumberland.com, Smoky Mountain Tops, Parman Energy, and B&B Flooring. What's the latest that you've heard about Kevin Byard and his talks with the Titans about what cap number, what salary he will play under this season?
Yeah, I mean, the last that I've heard was that there weren't any issues. And obviously, you know, we know what was said about the release being requested, but I haven't heard anything in regards to a trade or anything like that. They, from what I understand, intend to keep Kevin Byard in tow as one of their premier players on the defense. So that's what I have as the latest.
That was TD Teron Davenport last segment on the Kevin Byard report from Jeremy Fowler on SportsCenter yesterday, that Kevin Byard would be open to a trade. And to be completely fair, before I saw this come out from Jeremy Fowler, I kind of thought that they were going through the necessary conversations and negotiations behind closed doors, but ultimately each side had the same goal in mind of keeping Kevin Byard with Tennessee. I was a little surprised when I heard that report from Jeremy Fowler, but I guess it's just the agent's way of keeping it in the forefront of everyone's minds of, we're working on everything that we need to work on behind the scenes, but we're doing our due diligence and making sure that my client is taken care of, keeping him in the forefront of general managers' minds across the league.
Yeah, you know, you have to, if there is any, you know, truth to that, you know, you have to make sure that your client is well represented in regards to, hey, listen, you know, yes, they did ask us to take a pay cut. No, we did not ask for a release or anything else. They know where we stand as far as that. But potentially, yeah, we would be open to a trade, because you just want to make sure that your client has as many options as possible, whether it be, and I'm sure Kevin Byard's first option is to be here in Nashville and to retire, you know, wearing the two-tone blue. But I'm sure he also understands that, hey, listen, they've come to me for a reason in regards to taking a pay cut. So now we have to make sure that we, you know, cross all of our T's and dot all of our I's and make sure that we don't get caught, you know, sort of, you know, blindsided if the Titans do indeed choose to do something, you know, other than, you know, asking us to take a pay cut, and that is trading or releasing.
I was curious what Teron said when I asked him about, do you think they could stay with the three contracts that we've identified, right? Tannehill, Henry, and Byard. It still addressed the roster the way they want. And he made it sound like there were other opportunities out there, other players they could, quote, go to. And we didn't have enough time really to get into who those guys are in his mind. But One thing he did bring up specifically was, did they, in the negotiations with Jeffrey Simmons, create a little bit of space in the short term, knowing that they're paying him the guaranteed money, but they're going to spread it out over time? That would be something I'd be really, really interested in, because if they could create a little space that way, that would help. And then maybe there's a few other guys you could go to rework, because in a perfect world, you would have all three of those guys back, uh-huh. right? And the benefit of keeping their cap hits as they are right now is the big majority goes away after this year, and then it's easier to deal with it year by year. And you're not going the opposite way, footing the bill and creating this pile of debt that catches up to you down the road.
Well, I mean, they don't have anyone else other than a Harold Landry. But then again, is that fair to Harold Landry after you've given me a huge contract to ask me to then again rework the contract and sort of push some money down the line? Now, if you're going to give him more guaranteed money, then I'm sure he would say, hey, listen, you want to rework a deal? Just give me more money up front. I'm cool with it. I'm sure he would do that. But beside Harold Landry, no one else is at that threshold as far as contract-wise that they can go to and say, well, can you rework, take a pay cut? I mean, you look at guys like Danico Autry or Monty Hooker, Aaron Brewer. These are the guys that are next in line behind Tannehill, Byard, Harold Landry, and Derrick Henry. They're not going to go to these guys because they're making good money, but it's not to the point where if they go to these guys, they're penny pitching in, because it's not like these guys are making top money at their position.
Are you going to ask a guy on a rookie deal to take a pay cut?
You can't do that.
But I will ask you guys this question, because it's a question that I've been asking myself ever since I saw that report from Jeremy Fowler on SportsCenter. Are you nervous or concerned about Kevin Byard potentially not being a Titan in 2023?
No, I mean, it's weird for me to answer that, because you're asking me, like, okay, am I nervous that he won't be a Titan? No, but if they do make a move to, say, trade him, I'm not worried that this team would fall apart either, you know? So,
fair.
You know, do I think he will be on the roster next year, you know, this upcoming season, unless they do a deal during the trade or subsequently right after the trade to try to trade him, because I don't think they're going to release him. Even after June 1st, they're not releasing him. They would trade him before they do anything else.
Yeah, I can't see that at all. So to answer your question, Caroline, let's look at it from the perspective of a fan, right? You're the fan, you go to the pro shop, and you buy the Byard jersey. Are you nervous that when you go to the games – in 2023, hey, I got a jersey of a guy that's not on the team anymore. That's always
an antique.
Yeah, yeah. And my son did that a couple years ago. He put it on the Christmas list. He wanted a Byard jersey. He wanted Byard.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I want Byard. Uh-huh. So that was his guy. So he would be in this category of, hey, is my guy still going to be on there? So I feel pretty good about it. But like, if you're only looking, what are the chances that he's not a Titan? I think they're pretty low. One way or the other, they want Kevin Byard to be on the Titans, and Kevin Byard wants to be a Titan. Mm-hmm. I think when those two things are together, the odds are overwhelming that he'll stay, but stranger things have happened.
It's T's and P's to everyone who bought a Julio Jones jersey.
Yep.
I see a whole lot of those walking around Nissan Stadium.
You could probably find those right now in the bargain bin at TJ Maxx.
Yeah. $15 yep. Titans jerseys. Yep. Julio Jones, yeah. Adrian
those to your
Peterson.
Five or six-year-old kid, they don't know the difference, right?
They don't care.
Just says Titans on there. All right.
Jones could be anybody.
Exactly.
But to answer the question that I asked, I'm really not worried about it.
Uh-huh.
I'm not. And I kind of feel the same way that I did about the Jeffrey Simmons deal of, yeah, sure, there's a sliver of doubt in there or concern of what this team might be without this player, which, of course, this team would be in a much hairier situation without Jeffrey Simmons than it would be without Kevin Byard. No disrespect to Kevin Byard. It's just the position, the age. and the upside, I'm really not concerned about it. And maybe it's because, one, I think it's going to get done, and two, D-Maze, to your point, I don't think that if they don't have Kevin Byard that this team is just absolutely going to crash and burn. So I'm really not concerned about it. But let's get your thoughts on it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sean texts into the text line and says, why is Byard in Rand's crosshairs? He's our most productive member of the secondary. We've got like $100 million coming off the books next year. Just restructure and send that cap hit to next season.
They don't want to restructure.
That seems kind of obvious.
Yeah, that's the point. They don't want to restructure. They're not in the business of kicking a can down the road for another 2 or 3 years. And like you said, I don't think he's in the crosshairs of Rand Carthon of a guy, oh, we just got to get his deal. He needs to take a pay cut or he's gone. He's just looking at it from a cost-based, you know, analysis. It's, you know, this is costing us X amount of dollars. We may not think, as much as we love Kevin and he's playing great, yes, but that position, I've always said this, some teams value positions differently than others. Just because Kevin Byard is one of the top safeties in the National Football League doesn't mean the Titans want to pay him that much. If it was the quarterback, it'd be different. If it's an offensive line, it'd be different. A defensive lineman is different. They value positions and how much they're going to pay that player at that position different ways. This may not right now be high on Rand Carthon's list of people we need to be paying that much money to.
And also to the point of, you know, just we've got $100 million coming off the books next year. The Titans are not in the cushiest cap situation. Now, you can restructure any contract that you want to restructure, and you have cap space. But that's also seems too easy of a solution for this still to seem like it's still a problem. If they wanted to restructure the deal, I think that would be in the conversation. But it doesn't, where it stands like right now, seem like that's in the conversation between the Tennessee Titans and Kevin Byard, at least from all of the information that we have available. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, Barry Trotz, David Boyle, John Hines, they wrapped up the Predators 2022-2023 season. But the biggest questions are, what does this team look like moving forward, both in terms of leadership and on the ice? Those three spoke with the media this morning. We'll get our thoughts on all of that. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
Barry, this is for you. I think the answer might be obvious, but is the plan to keep John at least going into next season as the coach of this team?
Well, John has a contract, and as I said, this will be a process. And I'm going to evaluate, you know, if from the players to the staff to John. We're going to talk about his plan for next year and go from there. That's the process, and you got to respect the process. It's the same process that David has gone through with me for a long time. So I don't think he was able to answer that question right away when you asked me that.
That was future Predators general manager Barry Trotz this morning at the Predators end of season press conference. And I know John Hines' job security and John Hines' future with the organization is probably off-season question number one throughout this fan base. And Barry Trotz telling you right there, right now John Hines is under contract. That is the truth. John Hines is under contract for one more year with the Predators organization where it stands right now. Barry Trotz is going to be going through his evaluation. He's doing exit interviews with players throughout the rest of the week. He's doing exit interviews with the rest of the coaching staff. And I know that is going to be his biggest priority, is who is going to be the coach of this team next season. Has John Hines proved enough in the second half of the season that he deserves another crack at it to combine these veteran players, the Yossis, the Duchesnes, the Johansons, the Forsbergs, when they get back from injury, with the young guns and the young talent that brought so much fire to this organization in the second half of the season? The Tommy Novaks, the Luke Evangelistas, the Juuso Parsonens, the Cody Glasses, so on and so forth. I can't get a great vibe for where Barry Trotz stands. I think that he's being completely open and honest with us when he says these things. I just don't really, I can't get a good grasp on what he's thinking, both from his press conference today and his sit down with Jared last week.
I think if I had to put a label on it right now, and I'll try to use his words as much as I can, you know, he feels like there's a bright future, but what he wanted to emphasize is be patient. So that, to me, means that, you know, are they going to try to just go spin to the cap, you know, bring in some veterans, reload, and, you know, just try to feel like you're amongst the Giants next year? I don't think that's going to be the case. He talked about the process. Be patient. There's some things that might have to play out over the next year or two. But what I think would be realistic and what would be, quote, fun, I mean, that was one of the things that David Poyle said. You know, the first 50 games, it really wasn't very fun, right? They were stuck. You know, it was frustrating. Mm-hmm. The last 15 or 20 games was really fun. And you're kind of thinking that, wow, what if they had not lost Roman Josi for the last three and a half weeks? You know, what if they had gotten Philip Forsberg back? Like, could they have maybe even been sitting there getting ready for game one tonight? Who knows? But either way, it was fun. It was such a weird night on Friday walking out of here, knowing it was the last game. But so many people were really excited. The fans were like, hey, man, I love the young guys. This is going to be fun. I can't wait to see what happens in the future. It's like the best feeling you could have for a team that missed the playoffs for the first time in 9 years. So, I mean, it's a really odd thing. So the best of both worlds, you're staying young, and next year you keep that same feeling. You're not the best team, but if you could get back to the playoffs next year with a younger team, that would be a plus. That would be a plus, I think.
Yeah, it would be.
It's not unrealistic, I don't think.
No, it's not. But they, you know, John and, you know, I assume he's the head coach headed into next season, because they haven't said otherwise. Yes, they have to continue to evaluate, as what Trotsky said. But you're looking at this team and you want to try to find out while you're evaluating. How do we mesh the old with the new? I think the roster they had at the beginning, there was a point where they finally realized, okay, it's ran its course. There's no way we can fix this, so to speak. So hence, they went on a, you know, basically not necessarily a giveaway, but it was like, hey, listen, we're making these trades to get these guys out of here. We're getting back picks and stuff like that. So we're doing that because what we tried to continue, it just wasn't working. So now the last 25, 30 games, we're going to go this route. Unfortunately for the Preds, the guys that they did want to move forward with, well, six or seven of those guys got hurt, you know, and then now you got to bring even more young guys to the roster. And to their credit, you know, they came in and they were prepared to play. So now moving forward, it's, okay, how do we mesh what we saw with what we know we have in the guys that are here now? That's what they got to figure out. And if John Hines is going to be the one that's going to be in charge of that.
Yeah, and he very well might be, and I think as we sit here, it's more likely than not that he is the guy, at least going into next year. But the big picture question is, will he be the guy for the next 3, 4, 5 years? That's going to depend on how things go. I think there is a scenario where they're going to honor the last year of his contract. He's back next year. But beyond that, there's no guarantee. Like, don't you think – maybe here's a question for you guys. How would you perceive it? If Barry Trotz brings in his guy tomorrow and say, here's my coach, this is the guy I want, doesn't that maybe change the expectations and put him on the clock a little faster than if he stays and plays it out? Look, I'm still fortifying. I'm still I got flexibility. I'm building this roster. Be patient with me. That's his message today. I think he can stay with that message a little longer if he stays with the current coaching staff and he gives them a chance and he continues to give them a chance for the next season to see if this is the right fit before he changes everything around right now, because that's a whole new dynamic.
Well, I think regardless of which path Trotz choose to take, and I'm only going by, what this organization has done in the past, I think ownership will give him an opportunity to build this roster the way he wants it to be built. And that may take some years. And, it may take going through another year of John Hines and then figuring out, okay, either he is the guy or he's not the guy. But it seems like this group is patient with trying to build success, hold on to success. They were patient with David Poyle. It panned. We didn't win the Stanley Cup, got there, had some great seasons. I think in turn they're going to be patient with Barry Trotz as well, giving him an opportunity to build this roster the way he envisions it, as well as, whether he keeps John Hines another year or not. Whether he brings in a new coach this year or he brings in a new coach year after, I think they're still going to give him the time to build a championship team.
And I think I'll look at it from the other point of view, Willie, from the other side. Because you'll say, okay, maybe the clock starts ticking a little bit faster on a new coach because Barry Trotz brings in that new coach with all of the expectations understood of what he wants this new era, so to speak, of Predators hockey to look like. I would probably say the clock ticks faster on Hines because he's the one that's been here for the last couple of years, that now we have seen what this young core can do and what UC Soros can do, really. Because I don't want to lose the fact of what UC Soros really truly has done and how massive of a contribution he has made to this team staying in the playoff race. So you could say, well, we've seen what this young core can do. And we've said so many times, well, what would have happened to this team if this young core just had Forsberg and Yossi and McDonough consistently? What could this team have done? Well, now next year, we might see that. We might see this older core of this leadership core with these young guys that are motivated, that had shown so much in the second half of the season. So now it's like, well, if Hines can't win with the combination of the young guys and the core, then you're going to need to find somebody that can. And if you bring in a new coach, it's okay, well, let this new coach bring in his system. Let this new coach get acclimated to the team, learn the team, figure out the right system that they want to play with. I would think maybe a new coach would have a little bit more, I don't know the right word that I want to find here, have a little bit more tolerance from the fan base to not win right away.
I think that's possible. Mm-hmm. I could see either way. Arguing, but I think as it sits here now, you will probably not have a lot happens in the offseason, right? We're just starting the offseason here. We're just about to start the playoffs, right? This is going to be a lot of fun to watch to see who climbs to the top of the mountain here. But as I sit here today, I have a hard time seeing a lot of – when it comes around to make predictions next year, how many people will predict the Predators would be a playoff team next year. I don't think they will be predicted that way. So the expectations are going to be lower. I think the expectations from the fan base have been reset to a point because you've got Barry Trotz in here, and they decided to do what a lot of the fans were clamoring to do, and that was to, play for the future a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Shake it up. Let's get younger. Let's restock the farm system. And by the way, the farm system is already on its way. Like, you already have some guys coming up through the ranks. And this is before they ever tap into this pool of resources that they just got with all these trades, starting with the draft here this summer. So I think you have that going for you. I don't think you're going to convince everybody, no matter what, there's some people that think John Hines is the problem. I just don't happen to think that he is the problem like some people do. And I think we all agree, he did a very good job with the group at the end with all these young guys that a lot of will be part of the equation next year.
And I think one thing that Barry Trotz is going to have to do in his evaluations of the post-trade deadline success or overachievement that this team has had, how much was that John Hines? How much was that Carl Taylor's development of these young guys that they were just ready to go at the next level? And how much of it really truly was UC Saros? Because if we are going to talk about UC Saros being a Vezina caliber goalie, not just because of what he's done, but what he did with what he had around him, then I think that also needs to be part of it as well. How yep. much this team overachieved because how much UC Saros had on his shoulders.
I would argue that most of it is UC Saros. That's no slight at anybody else. That's no slight at Carl Taylor or John Hines or anything like that. And that Barry Trotz said that. I mean, his words exactly were, elite goaltending covers up a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they've got to make the improvement on the roster, is put a better group in front of UC Saros. But when you have the elite goaltending, mm-hmm. you have a chance. And that's really, I think, the most encouraging thing in the coming years. And UC Saros is not 33, 34 years old. He's just turning 28 years old. He's got a lot of good hockey left in him. And you've got Kevin Lankinen, a darn good backup, mm-hmm. signed through next year, and one of the top prospects in the world at his position in Askarov, who is now, we're going to see what he does in the playoffs in the AHL, is one of the youngest goalies mm-hmm. in that league. He is one of the youngest goalies in the AHL. But they've got a chance to win big with a lot of these guys in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. That will be an interesting thing to watch who does well in that.
When Barry Trotz said that, Willie, that a good goaltending can cover up a whole lot, which is true, it's what UC Saros has done, made me think, Barry, expand on that a little bit. What exactly do you think he's covering up? Let's dissect that a little bit. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. But coming up next, John Hines' job and his job security is going to be evaluated by Barry Trotz throughout the offseason. But what is really a realistic timeline for the coaching position? We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts as well. Caroline Willie DeMays, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline Willie DeMays, they come out to Bridgestone Arena on April 22nd at 2 p.m. for the Nashville Predators Open House. The open house will include tours of the Preds locker room, Lexus Lounge, team store, and the chance to shoot on net to win two lower-level full-season tickets for next season. Get more details at nashvillepredators.com/openhouse. So I was kind of thinking about this as we talk about John Hines' job next season. If Barry Trotz does decide to look elsewhere for the head coach of the Nashville Predators in 2023, when do you have to make that decision? Because the draft is coming up in June, July. Does Barry Trotz want the next coach in place by the time of the draft so GM and coach can kind of collaborate on the talent that they want moving forward? Would Barry Trotz wait to make that decision until he fully takes over on July 1st as full-time general manager? And that goes for the decision on John Hines either side, if he decides to stay or if he decides to find another option at head coach next season. And also, when do you have to make that decision to ensure that the candidates that you want to interview are available? Clock's a ticking. There are other teams in the NHL that are looking for really high quality coaches. You don't want to be the one waiting behind the eight ball and having kind of last pickings of coaches available in the NHL. So just the timeline, I don't really know how much time this team really has if they do decide to move on from John Hines.
You would think, Willie, right, that, you know, prior to the draft, they would want, if indeed they're going to make a coaching change, they would want to have their coach in place so they can do the evaluations of their draft picks together starting now up until the draft, so everyone's on the same board. Where the new coach is not coming, new coach is coming in and saying, "Listen, I don't know any of these players you guys chose. I don't, you know." You would rather go into it knowing who you drafted, why you drafted that particular player, having a plan in place for that player in the system that you run. You wouldn't want to, you know, not have a coach, have the draft, and then get a coach.
Yeah, I think that's a point. I'm just gonna throw this term out there. I think you just got to put some trust in Barry Trotz with what he emphasized over and over and over today was be patient with me. I've got the process here. I got to go through my process, and in time, you'll see what we do. I think one of the big messages that David Poyle said is he said, I'm going to pass the keys. He goes, wait a minute. I actually don't have actual keys. Where did that come from? Are there keys? But he said, as I pass this to you, what I hoped that I've accomplished as, you know, created flexibility with the cap space, with draft capital, so that there are options that you have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got a coaching staff that has basically one year left on their contract. So there's options there, too, as we're discussing these options. So it doesn't all have to be done by the draft or anything else, I don't think. Because, like I said, regardless of who the coach is, I just don't think there's going to be around the league all these huge expectations saying, hey, the Predators, they're a team to be reckoned with. They're a team that's going to contend for the Stanley Cup. I think they're a little bit away from that. The question is, you know, how do you build a roster that does get into that conversation again, like they were 4 or 5 years ago, most recently, right, when they were President's Trophy, Western Conference champion kind of thing, right? They've had to turn that roster over a lot. And the good thing is they're not, like, let's take a couple of teams. Calgary just fired their GM today. Pittsburgh fired their GM. Why? They missed the playoffs, and they have a lot of problems with their salary caps. They don't have a lot of draft capital. The Islanders barely get in. Panthers barely get in. They've been trading picks. They've been mortgaging the future. What the Predators have done here is they have held on to their draft capital. They haven't been trading their first-round picks the last 4 or 5 years. And so they hopefully will be able to speed up the clock a lot quicker that way.
Do you think this was done almost strategically by David Poyle in a sense of, you know, and I think we asked him sort of this question before when we had him on, whereas he knows that he's exiting, you know, out. He already know who the new GM is going to be. And he's trying to give him, Barry Trotz, a plethora of things to have at his disposal once he becomes GM, like certified officially our GM, whereas he's not looking at a roster that is old and thinking like, man, how am I going to do this? It seems like Poyle almost strategically set this up once they figured out we're not going nowhere with these guys and sort of, okay, let's kind of clean house a little bit. Get younger, let them see some of the guys that we bring up from Milwaukee, gather a lot of picks, and allow Barry to build this roster the way he wants it.
I think so, and I think Barry himself said, I wasn't exactly sure what we were going to see once we did all that, right? I think, like I said, they were 16-10-2 in their last 28, right as that process started. If you'd have told me on that day that they were going to go 10-16-2, I'd have said, oh, you know, all right, at least they kept fighting, they scrapped a little bit. But I think they were really surprised to a person that they were able to do that much. And so that's where Barry Trotz, I think he's very excited about these young guys. He said, he basically said today, look, this might be a little bit better than I thought, but I'd still have to be realistic that we haven't seen what these guys can do in 82 games. And always keep in mind what he kept saying all along. UC Soros papers over some of the flaws, right? And so you have to try to hone in on how do you make that stronger, some of the things around UC Soros, knowing that he's going to give you a chance. But if you can strengthen a little bit more, this is going to speed up the process.
And that's at least how I interpret maybe the meat of Barry Trotz's evaluation, probably more so about John Hines than the roster as a whole, is this tale of two seasons that we've seen with the Nashville Predators. Before the trade deadline, underachieving, a team that brought in Ryan McDonagh and Nino Niederreiter to make a push for the playoffs, and they didn't look like a team that was going to make a push for the playoffs. David Poile even said that. We didn't look like a team poised to make the playoffs before the trade deadline. And then all of a sudden, second half of the season, you trade away some of your core players that have been here since the cup run, and then your captain gets hurt, your leading scorers get injured, and your entire team is made up of young guys that just made their first NHL debut after, you know, playing years in Milwaukee, and all of a sudden you're winning games, you're beating the big bad Boston Bruins, you are looking more energized than you had looked all season. So I think my evaluation of what Barry Trotz's evaluations are going to be, what is the reason for the two, the tale of the two seasons, the underachieving season with the veterans, the overachieving season, half of the season, with the young guys, what can we attribute all of that to? UC Soros is part of it. What percentage of credit and blame do we give to the guys that you sold off, the veterans not playing at a level that they need to play at, the coaching staff, so on and so forth? That's what I think the real evaluation of all of this is going to be.
Agreed. And yeah. I think over time we're going to find out some of the answers to those questions. But I still hold on to the feeling that a lot of people had on Friday leaving this building. It's exciting because I think as you sat there on March the 4th or whatever, I think there was a little bit of, oh boy, what are these next months, years going to be like this? How far back are they going to have to go to move forward again? But I think there look like there's some pathways to where, look, it might take a little bit, but I do think the future looks – I'm pretty optimistic about some of the opportunities that they'll have, you know, going forward, regardless of how they actually answer all these questions, right? I think no matter what they do, they've got a chance to be a good team here sooner than later because all of the draft capital that they've got and some of the prospects that are coming up through. It's pretty exciting. And they're still going to have Roman Josi. They're still going to have UC Soros. Still going to have Philip Forsberg. Keep your fingers crossed that Forsberg's back, ready to go next year. I mean, he didn't play for the second game after the All-Star break on.
Yeah.
Get him back in there. What does that look like? Pretty good.
That is going to do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love and love on somebody. Peace.